Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Keith Reza. Alan Lee will not be here today, but we have a great, this is our first show back in studio since the pandemic, and my guest, a very funny guy, you've seen him in Mrs. Doubtfire, my favorite movie, The Rocketeer, right. Groundhog Day, mm-hmm. The great Rick Overton.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Hey, low five.
Oh, with the knee, with the legs.
Come on, low five.
Pound, pounded it. So, this is great. Are you from Sherman Oaks? Because you know this area pretty well.
No, but I kind of know the hood. Yeah. You know, I just like it so much. But no, I don't like it enough that everyone should move here. Or
right.
Like that. No.
It's like, stay away. This is my spot.
No, it's okay. It's all right. You know, you don't want to do park just because parking's good. The world parking.
Parking is good because this is a new studio. At the old studio, we had valet parking.
Yeah, right.
But now it's just parking on the street, and you don't have to wait 20 minutes for your car.
You just have to walk 20 to get
to it. Oh, man. So, Rick, how's it going, buddy? You've been...
It looks like this city's starting up again.
Yeah.
And I'm going in...
Do you have any shows coming up, live shows coming up?
I have one. It's going to be this Saturday at 8 o'clock at the Freeway Funkyard Comedy Show.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Look it up, and it's on Eventbrite, and there's going to be two shows, but I'm on the first one. And great lineup of very funny people.
Yeah. You should ask to do the second one, too. Or are you overdoing
Well, let's
the...
not be... Come on now. A lot of people very anxious to get back on a live stage again. Yeah. That kind of a little bit, me first even, to take two shows away when people have been doing Zoom. I've turned into a Zoombie from the amount of Zooms I've done as a rule. You know, yeah. I've had maybe 1,000. I have a light ring suntan now around my face. From the amount of Zooms I've done, I'm going to actually, you know what, I'm going to start it. There's so many Zooms I've done, I'm going to start a union.
Yeah, a Zoom union.
ZAG, a Zoom Attendees Guild. And then there's a ZIG, which is Zoom Interested. They're interested, they're watching, but they might not contribute. But there's no benefits for you, but I do want you to kick some money back in, and you'll start to see some feedback and swag, like a mug or something.
Is there
after
a GoFundMe?
All set. Is there a GoFundMe? Yeah, no, we're going to be going with the new GoFund Yourself. That's the new system we're going to be using. Yeah. Why don't you GoFund Yourself?
Yeah. That's a good, I think that's a better name than GoFundMe. GoFund Yourself.
Yeah. Take a flying leap and go fund yourself.
I said this before the show, but I have to say it again because my mentor and my boss and the guy I tour with, he listens to the show all the time, and I told him you were going to be on.
Oh, great.
Norm told me, thank you so much for being nice to him.
Norm, love you, man. Comic genius. Kind words from a great, brilliant, brilliant guy.
Did you guys work together
really
on the
man.
Dennis
he's
Miller?
He's just a great guy.
Yeah. Did you guys work together on Dennis Miller on writing? Or no?
No, but we were friends throughout. We shot the same day on the HBO comedy specials back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And so they break the nights up, and it was this theater in Chicago. And I got two shows out of it, and one night I get one show one night, and he gets one show, and we both do it. And then the next night, the same thing. Wear the same clothes, match everything, you know, and then you come back and do it again. And it was a great row of tapings where I got to see this elemental genius of what he did, you know. Hey, there, Bob, you know. The sarcasm played in this really down-to-earth way.
Yeah.
All these wild concepts. It's very dangerous that way because your brain lets them right in.
Yeah, I love him. I mean, he's one of my best friends, but as an artist, I love him because he's so fearless.
Yeah, he's fearless. Yeah. And he's great on SNL.
Yeah, he was great.
He was like the highlight in so many different things, and a great impressionist, and, you know, a lot of things that people don't know he was also great at.
Yeah.
You know, and his acting is fantastic, so...
Yeah. So speaking of acting, I do actually have one more question about the Chicago.
Give him a hug for me.
I will, definitely. You said you shot the specials like one night, two night. He did.
I think it was one or two nights. Yeah.
So did
or it was the same night in a row? But you know, your brain's all over the place at that point.
Did you do the late show or the first show? Like how?
I think you have. Oh, maybe that's what it is. You have to do both.
Okay.
And they just push the house out and load a new one in.
Yeah.
So that they don't sit through your stuff again.
Yeah.
Right. You know. So they have usually two crowds waiting on reservation to get in.
Yeah. How many of those specials did you? Because I know those were half hour specials.
Half hour. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think
you overshoot just a little bit, but not by much. Yeah.
I think a half hour special is actually perfect because I think like a lot of comics now, like they try and reach for multiple hours and like a lot of hours aren't really special. Material.
It's tough, man.
You know what I mean?
It's tough.
Yeah.
You're up against so many different walls at once and just bases of comparison where you're going up against everyone else's one-hour special, and they were going up against everyone else's one-hour special. And so it's all trying to find out where your brushstroke goes in the museum of paintings that look – some of them look similar after a while, you know?
Yeah.
You have to be sort of an art aficionado to know which guy is really doing what, and not everybody gets the booklet for that. They're just going, they're walking through the museum, you know, and they have to consider all those things too.
Yeah. Now, how has comedy changed from like the 80s to the 90s to now? Like, because I know now it's more internet based. Like, a booker will watch someone set on the internet and say,
right.
And like, you know, back in the day, it was word of mouth, and you know, it was more. I feel more based on talent than it is on how many views on the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the movie Predator?
With the alien?
Yeah.
When
he pulls the mask down, all he can see is your heat.
Yeah.
And just he goes for the brightest orange thing.
Yeah.
It seems like they're not looking for what you're doing. It's just what shows up on my mask of infrared. I just want the hottest thing. Not the one with the most light.
Yeah. See, that's the same with me. Like when I interview people, like I don't really care how many listeners I have. I just enjoy the talk, and I feel each talk makes me a better artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the way to do it. I think. Yeah.
So, and you had a podcast too. The
Overview.
Overview. Yeah. And it was on the Sideshow Network.
That's it. And you can find it on iTunes.
iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review, right? But you're not doing
five,
it.
I got 50. I did 5-0. That's it. Knocked them out, and I like what I did, and then that was that.
Yeah. You ever think about bringing it back? Or
maybe.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. Something
it might happen. You never know.
The overview
2.0.
2.0. And now movies, you're also a great actor. I recognize you from one of my favorite movies, Mrs. Doubtfire, you know, where smoking or non-smoking.
Oh, that's very kind. I just had a lot of fun. Like, you know, a lot of these things are sort of done on a whim of, would you like to come up and have some fun and that kind of thing. Because a lot of fine actors could have done the part.
Yeah.
But this is because, you know, it is because we're pals and it was great. And I'm very grateful.
I wanted to ask you, like, because as an actor, you know, you're known mostly for your comedy, your improv, and your stand-up. Do you get a lot of work based on that, or do you actually audition?
Both.
Okay.
And you should know how to do both.
Really?
You should know how to do a reading, a cold reading. You should know how to bring some sort of a solid-looking-ish character in 45 minutes of having printed the page out to yourself. And sort of running it to yourself at red lights and then in the parking spot for a little bit before you come up to do the audition. And try to create what would be the equivalent of 6 weeks of working with your partner in a theater scene. If it were a theater piece, but you got to just crash this thing out.
Well, see, I think that's also like
choices.
I also think like that's like one of the bright sides of we were talking earlier how like the internet is probably terrible for comedians, but it's also maybe a bright side for like auditions because you could keep recording yourself, send in what you feel is your best.
Yeah, that's the upside to not having anyone bouncing back or feeding back at all with you, you know.
So,
and I'm lucky; I have my manager bouncing back with me.
Yeah.
So I go to his office and we record, and that's, you know, the way we get it out. And yeah. It's not not the way it used to be. Yeah. Where you could drive all over creation and you got all that 405 tension in your shoulders and you got to let it go because you got to be this guy in the scene, you know.
Yeah, I think you have a great...
Don't bring it into the room.
I think you have a great manager because he actually said yes on wanting to about letting
Bruce
me interview.
Bruce is great. Yeah. Bruce Smith, he's great. And he's also a fine photographer. Have a look at his work online. Yeah. He's knocking it out. He captures artists in a wonderful way.
Yeah. But a lot of managers say no, especially right now. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't like no managers. Like, a good manager should be someone who turns a no into a yes. You know what I mean?
A good manager should be looking out if that no or yes is really in the best interest of the client first, and then in the service to whatever else is being done.
Yeah.
And this is a great idea for me to do this. Because, you know, this is a really good thing you're doing. So it all works.
I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, it's mutual. He knows when something's good.
Yeah.
He's right, smart. You know?
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
So about the movies, when you do a lot of improv, do they go into the script, or how do you do that? Because I know there's a script, but I also know, like, as a comic, you probably improv some lines.
Yes, that both. And more than half of my IMDb, you could see I've done some improv on. And there's that little, there's places where in films there's just that much wiggle room for everybody. And then there's this much for some people and a little bit. And then sometimes none.
Right.
Just do it. And the improv is you said those lines.
Right.
And that's as close as you get. And learn to be good at that. And learn to find every bit of that nuance that can be given.
Yeah.
And look like it's in your skin.
Yeah.
And then there's places where I'm working on, like, Groundhog Day, working with Rick Dukeman and Bill Murray. And Harold, of course, was a Second City guy.
Yeah.
So he loved improv. We improvised all that. I came up with sliding around on the ice. I can't open the door. Physical drunk. I came up, I have to almost throw up the whole time. And we played off that. Bill Murray goes, flapjacks. But, oh, yeah. Thank you. That's his bit. He gave that to me. He whispered it in my ear. Right? We go, okay, just do that. And I go, yeah, good. Some more flatness, perhaps. You know, whoa. And you're going to throw up and say, both, I think. You know, he goes, it was both, I think. Like, yeah, it was great. And it's like pro wrestling. Okay, into the thing, routine six. And Harold loved it. You know, he said, give one for me and for the script, and then let's just play some more and play some more. Yeah. And then once he trusts that you play some more, they kind of let you play throughout other things.
Well, like, for example, like that's a question, but it's a two question in the same question. Like, when Harold's directing you or directed you, you know, a comic genius in himself, and then you're working with Bill Murray, who's also a comic genius, you know what I mean? Like, how does that... Like, that just makes the pie more perfect. You know what I mean?
It ups your game.
Yeah.
And if there's a point when you should be, your gratitude should show up in the form of just nailing it.
Yeah.
And not backing away from it.
Yeah.
But your gratitude is, you got this opportunity, now stomp it, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean hit anybody else. Just means it, that thing in you and that thing in your performance. Just grab and possess it.
And knock it out of the park.
Knock that out of the park. Yeah. And it's what everyone else in the scene wants.
They want it to be good.
Yeah, it should be that good that they're proud they were also in that scene.
Yeah.
They also love the scene for the same reasons you do. Then because your brain has to at some point come around to the idea that maybe you really are in this other club, even if only briefly.
Yeah. When you film stuff, do you go into the mine as a stand-up or do you go into the mine as an improv actor?
I don't know if I could separate them.
Really?
I always brought the two along. You know, when I do my stand-up, I've got a special coming out on Comedy Dynamics on the 22nd of this 22nd of this month, and it's going to be Rick Overton's first set list stand-up special. And it's the game set list where they project the topics of your stand-up
on the monitor.
And you turn and you just start talking like it's out of nowhere, but it was always your act. Yeah. And you got to do it like it was something you've known for a long time, but your mind is just inventing like a locomotive right now. Yeah. And then you turn and another one. You do like five in a row. So I do a bunch of those in a row, and I made it into a special. And so it's going to be
awesome.
So I just want to give it a try, you know, and to show everybody that you can trust that part of your brain when you're making stuff, because that's the part of you that ever made anything brand new.
Yeah, and it's also writing on stage.
It's at the speed of light.
Yeah.
It's, you know, consciously riffling through your old Rolodex of words in your conscious mind is like dial-up. And improv is out of your gut, and it's like just high-speed internet.
Yeah.
It just changes the way it flows out of your mouth, because you got this sluggish analog smoking device out of the way, and let your gut, which runs like an animal, like a feral animal, it has feral intellect, and it's smarter than us.
Have you ever seen a comedian who do set lists maybe get easier topics than you, and you think, oh, fuck, I wanted those topics or something?
Well, I think instead of that, I just also start writing for that one, too, in my head. I just don't say anything because I'm watching the show.
Right. Okay.
Nothing. And there's nothing to say to anyone. You don't share your version of it with anyone because they're going, oh, yeah, thanks for not liking my version. You know. Oh, that was better than what I did when I was sweating my ass off. Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for taking the time to tell me that as a note. Like how do I use that note when it's improv, right? So I don't share those things, but I think every comic's kind of... Oh, yeah. I wish I could... You just let it happen. You know what? It's just your brain staying in shape. That's all. Because when it's your turn to get up there and do it again, that's that same device, except now you're talking.
I do think every comic does do that, even on regular shows, too. Like, they'll think, okay, how can, like, not, like, say if you see someone perform, but you could be like, okay, here's how I would do it in that person's third, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you would be
well,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. You'd be like, oh, I'd pretend I'm Rick Overton right now, and I would do this. You know what I mean?
Well, I wouldn't pretend the Rick Overton part.
Oh, really? Oh, who would you pretend to be? Because I'm saying, like, if I saw you.
Oh,
I would pretend to be you.
You would pretend to be Rick Overton. You don't need that part.
Oh, okay.
Just say what you would say as you. Just take the Rick part out, and what would your brain say? Because don't leave that thing in the way.
Right.
Oh. You don't need that part. All you need is the... Now, now I got the mic. Go. Start talking. Right. Swim. You're sinking. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Sometimes it's fun to
sink. Get that
other
crap out of the way. Yeah. No, but I mean, the part you're working on, the part you want exercised, is just that instinct part. It'll just go, yeah, the hell with that. You got out of the way. Excuse me. I got to breathe. I got to swim.
And another thing that, like, people don't realize about improv-ing versus stand-up. As stand-up, I think it's fair to say you want every joke to be hilarious. And I think on improv-ing, what people don't understand is you're working with a team, or sometimes three or four people. And you got to be the guy who doesn't always have to get the laughs. You know what I mean?
And traditionally, those are the two sides before set list. The set list removes the team.
Oh, really? Okay.
You're improvising without the team now.
Yeah.
Because you're improvising. You're looking at the suggestion. You're turning around talking. So it's what you would be doing if they told you you're a bunch of cowboys on a cattle run and go. But there's nobody else.
Right.
So there's no one to bounce on. It can't be anybody else's fault. Yeah. But it's you telling a story as yourself, but completely making up Liar's Club, defending the idea of whatever it is. It'll be more than just one word. It'll be kind of a weird suggestion, and it puts you in a corner, which I like. And sometimes I'll set it up by really saying something that will, this word will be perfectly to set me up, and it'll be the most unperfect word on purpose, and then I have to really dig my way out of it, you know.
You ever tell like a joke that, like, because when I read scripts at my script writing class, you know, sometimes I'll mess up the joke, but I'll go with it like that's part of the script, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think like that's a good tool as a comic, just to not admit you messed up, just go with it, you know.
It's not so much the admitting as the going with.
Yeah.
And sometimes admitting it was a mess up
Like
is the best going with there is for a stand-up. You can't stay cool forever. Your vulnerability has to be the thing that links everybody to you at some point.
Yeah.
Cool is the opposite of that, because cool is everything you didn't show everyone.
That's true. That's true. I also feel like people who act cool don't really make the greatest stand-up comic artist.
You can't. You're playing on the opposite side of where you need to be. You need to be on the side where everyone's empathizing with you, and they can't do that from a place where there's no place to put the empathy because you're too cool. The wall doesn't let empathy in.
That's true.
There's nothing to link it to.
That's true.
You're set. You're good. If you're cool, you don't need my empathy. I'm going to save it for someone who's like, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Now, I feel like the hero aiming it towards someone like that.
Yeah. I look at it like you would never see the popular guy do any form of the arts like comedy or improv, you know, because like they'll only take it the one direction of, hey, I'll say it cool. But I think like the awkward person or the person who, you know, wasn't very known is probably best at that because they could change the dynamics like that.
And it also depends on what you're doing with the comedy.
Yeah.
And I think it's, are you punch, as long, I think as long as you're not punching down.
Yeah.
And you're not punching the person who needs empathy.
Right.
You can be on level with them, I think, or just leave them alone.
Yeah.
As long as you're not stomping on them.
Yeah.
And then I think punching up is fine.
Because you want to reach the
Curlin
trophy.
Punched up.
Yeah.
He was always David against Goliath.
Yeah, that's true. Explain what David and Goliath is.
Sorry? What was that?
I was just making a joke.
Oh, well, explain what David and Goliath are.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
I see.
I was just throwing you a set list. I don't know.
Oh, yes. Well, I think they were a clay animation series from the, I believe, early 60s that were done by a sort of a spiritually very based in Christianity group that that believed that Davy was this young kid and Goliath was his big Great Dane dog who could also talk.
Right.
He had the gift of speech, but was stupid even for a dog. And yet could speak. A lot of ironies in the series. But, yeah, now get on YouTube. See if I'm making this part up. Oh, my God. Am I not making this part up? Those guys were tripping.
Right. It's also fascinating because I believe I read your family was in the music biz. Is that accurate or not accurate? It's accurate. So how does that...
Why, what did you think?
Oh, no. You were looking at me like I misread it.
About my parents?
No, I was just going to say, how does the music, like... Because a lot of, you know, music, people go into music and you went into comedy.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, what was that adventure like?
Well, you know, it's like they did the music thing, and it skipped over me and went to my brother. Check out Steve Overton on YouTube. He's brilliant. He got music gift.
He's got the music.
He really got it. He got it, like, got it. Everything that I was supposed to get just jumped over me and just dumped onto him. He's got it all. He completely produces and sings and does everything on his own, on his music from A to Z, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And my father was Thelonious Monk's big band arranger and taught at Juilliard and the New School and helped invent bebop jazz and was, and if you ever hear about the Jazz Loft series or the Jazz Loft, the documentary, that's my dad's loft. There's a new movie called Minamata about Eugene Smith, the photographer. That was my dad's partner in the building.
So in a way, the movie's about your dad, but they just say it's about Eugene.
No, he's just a part. It's the other way around. It's the other way around.
Yeah.
My dad was a part of an element in that.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
So if you wanted the history, that's it. And then my mother was also in music. She was in the Ray Heatherton's Heathertones and then moved over to be in the Cordettes.
Oh, that's awesome.
They did Lollipop and Mr. Sandman. She was not in the recording run. You know the way Ink Spots and groups will lose a member but keep the name of the group?
Yeah.
And then that member will go on and franchise one entire whole new group around the one original member, and another one will leave and franchise one whole group around the member.
Yeah, it's kind of like NSYNC.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Well, you know, as much as it seems like, oh, that's a modern reference for it, it probably is the same exact dynamic.
Right.
You're too old. You're 19. You're out. You can go to the bar with all the 35-year-old menudo guys getting drunk because, you know,
yeah,
they tossed me when I was 18.
Now, I don't like asking fanboy questions, but I do have one fanboy question, if I may. Okay, I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
All right.
Fire away.
So the Rocketeer, I know you were only in a scene, but when you did it, did you know that it was going to be, because I don't think it did well at the box office, but did you know that it was going to be like a movie that really touches people?
I just love Joe's work.
Yeah.
And, he doesn't get the credit for being, I think, the best superhero director around.
Yeah.
He gives them a moral basis and core that they're not like cynical semi-villains like all the other guys. They're just really just good guys.
And they're
the
normal
Captain America,
people.
He throws himself on the grenade because he thought he was going to save others. Like, you don't see most other superheroes doing it. That's a sad part of life I have some philosophy about. But now I have to crash through masonry because I'm angry at one guy. I have to destroy your city to avenge one guy who shoved my mom.
Yeah. I agree. Like,
they've been turned into kind of sociopaths now, you know.
And narcissistic, yeah.
And narcissistic, it's about them and their agenda. Hey, dude, you just destroyed the city, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, it reflects today's real world. Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Like, my favorite superheroes are movies where it's not like that. Like, Captain America, I love.
Isn't
Dick
that
Tracy.
Great? Yeah. So, when I went on the set of... you know, I didn't know what I was going to get when I went on the set there.
Right, okay.
Because I was just showing up to see the clamshell open up, and I want to see the wire work when it's flying, because I'm an effects nerd, so yeah. I wanted to see him.
How was that? Pack. Was that cool?
It was amazing.
Oh, all right.
The stunt man was great, and bashing into the ice sculpture and all that stuff. And he said, Joe, what's this? I said, hey, do you want to be in the movie? Yeah. Slick your hair back. You can't cut your hair, right? I don't know that. Can we just slick it back? Yeah. Tuck it in the collar. Yeah. And then, because I just thought it was going to be in the background. He said,
right.
Hey, do you want a line? Yeah. And he gave me, how about the title of the movie? I said, oh, yeah, give me the title of the movie. That's great. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's The Flying Man. The one that does it. It's The Rocketeer. And
yeah.
So I get to say the name of the movie.
Oh. And Joe gave you that because he was friends with you.
That's right. We met on, we became friends on Willow when he was working at EFX on Willow.
Oh. Willow's the Val Kilmer movie.
That's right. Yeah. And Kevin Pollak and I were the two little brownie guys, and we held the record for the most amount of superimposed little people in a movie since the Disney epic Darby O'Gill and the Little People. We broke Darby O'Gill's record for little people spliced into shots.
Do you think that you still have that record?
I don't know anymore. Now with Lord of the Rings, I think they beat us.
Yeah. Well, hey, it was a
20-year
run.
Rings, a 20-year run wasn't bad, though, to hold an effect. And it was the movie that invented morphing.
Oh.
Was invented for that movie when he's waving the wand around and trying to turn her back into the witch again.
Right.
Yeah. And that they had to come up with an effect for it. So they did morphing. And everyone used it after that. Michael Jackson was the next one to use it after that. With you're black, you're white. You know that song? And the face would keep shifting every time the actor would snap their head.
Right.
To a different person.
Wait, was this the Thriller? Or
no.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
The pop star.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did a movie?
Yes, the pop star. Yeah.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, and he did a video right after. I can't remember the exact name for the song, but it's about people snapping their heads.
Oh, okay. And it's like dead zombies or something?
No.
I'm thinking of someone else. So.
That's Thriller.
Oh, okay.
That's Thriller. That was...
I'm not a music buff. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that you... But
I just know NSYNC.
Do you like FX, though?
A Fox?
No, I mean like special effects.
Oh, not really. But
okay.
I enjoy the stories of them. Like, if I like the story, like Rocketeer, I love the story. So I love.
Weren't the effects great on that movie?
For the time,
they're still great.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's funny how like special effects nowadays, like they're major computer generated. When in the, you know, 90s or the 80s, they were generated, but like, and during that time, I'm sure they were great.
There were computers involved.
Yeah.
Camera passes repeating on a track back and forth as the layers of detail went in, reload, go back in, and everything has to be plated together. Yeah. And now just computer does one giant flat thing, you know.
Yeah. How like when you're on a set on a movie that you're filming, do you like, do you talk to the grips and do you talk to the cameraman and you find out what they're doing and all that?
Every single time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Since day one on the set.
So that's like school.
Especially too. Since ILM, I did it every day on the set. You know?
Yeah.
I would nerd my way around to this. And, oh, yeah, I know this. And like when I did Grimm, you know the show Grimm?
Yeah.
I played a werewolf in that. And I thought for sure I was going to have to go into hours of makeup. But I was like, we're getting up to lunch. And the next scene is he transforms into a werewolf. And I was like, just snacking, eating my carrot stick and going, doesn't anyone want to put me in that? Oh, no, we're going to grid you.
Yeah.
And I stand in front of the grid, and it paints the green lines on me. Normal face, happy, angry, monster, you know. Now, same here. Turn all the way around.
Yeah.
And go to lunch. And I come back, and they go, do we need the dots? You know, the locator dots, so for motion capture can recognize where your face is moving around so it can make the facial features move on the other thing.
Yeah.
They said, no more dots. New download. You don't need dots anymore.
Wow.
And I thought for sure. So instead, I'm with just my regular face.
Yeah.
And it looked kind of stupid when I'm doing it just as me. But when you see it as the monster, it does not look stupid. It looks amazing. And this is back in 2015. It was just amazing.
And what's it called? Green screen.
Yeah. They don't even have it anymore. You don't need that anymore.
Really?
It just knows where you are. But that's not the part that changed. It just changed my face.
Oh, my God.
It went past all that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Facial recognition. You know, that stuff they're all so scared of. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah. I'm terrible at facial recognition because I have Asperger's, so I only see one face. So, like, it's like, yeah. Pound. For the folks at home who are listening, we just fist bumped.
Oh, they're not looking at the camera thing?
Oh, no, they are, but I just promote the audio. I mean.
Low five. Another low five.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
This is why I would be a terrible actor, because like I want to do acting, but like I don't want to do auditioning, and I feel if I ever, I've done a couple like stupid independent films that, you know.
What did you do? Who'd you play?
I did a movie called Terrible People. I was a bank robber and I died.
Oh, was that fun?
The dying part was, because I didn't want to.
Did
like,
you get a pack?
Like,
a squib?
No, it was like an independent school thing.
Oh, you grab your chest and go down.
Yeah. So a cop shoots me.
How'd you die?
A cop shot me.
And how do you feel you did?
I felt I did. I died pretty good.
You went right flat down?
Yeah, I just like, yeah. And I had like three lines in the whole thing. I was, take the money, so die.
Was a stunt death? Did you?
I think I did it in two takes. I just fell down and.
Hey, if you don't have to reset the shirt for the, oh man, the guilt if you mess up a squib death.
Yeah.
Boom. Oh, ow. Now, God, oh man, wardrobe. Oh God. That's 45 minutes minimum, you know.
Yeah. But like I was actually just thinking about the other day when they show people's death in like movies or TV show, and like they'll show you the dead body. Like, what if they breathe too heavy or something?
Breathing in a dead shot in the winter,
yeah,
is murder. But there's a trick to it.
Oh, what's the trick?
Breathe through your nose.
Oh.
Less steam. Maybe it won't read.
Oh, okay.
Really reads. Might not.
Yeah.
And it might have enough time to cool if you go slow.
Especially if it's only like a 10, 15 second.
Yeah, and the you know, the tape is up and the cops are walking past you and stuff like that, and it comes up to them. Please go up to them. Sit.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll keep that in mind for terrible people, too.
When we were doing... good. Hey, didn't he die in the... No, it's his twin brother.
Yeah.
And he wants... and he wants revenge.
But I guess I always wanted to be, like... Because, like, I'm also socially awkward, so, like, I always... I auditioning, I'm very, like, bad at it.
So you're a stand-up?
Yeah.
You're a stand-up comic.
Exactly. So I think I'd be great if someone saw my comedy and say, hey, we should put that guy into the guy at the phone booth or something.
Be you.
Yeah.
Especially in today's market where we can sort of make our own product up to a certain point now. There's a new latitude in digital camera usage and social media. There's not a lot of money in it yet, but for one to advertise who and what they truly are, you've never had a more open market that way, or had it be easier to produce on your own.
Right.
With just your laptop and a camera not much bigger than that, or just that, you can shoot your own show that really showcases, like, out of your heart and out of your spirit, the you want the rest of the world to see.
Exactly.
Whereas it kind of before, there's so much camera equipment, and everything became a committee, and everything had to be by mutual agreement. Who gets to really be in charge of what?
Yeah,
that's all behind you now.
Yeah, I just, like, honestly, I didn't want to die by a cop. I wanted to spend the money.
Yeah, but they needed a dead guy to go, ah, we lost Joey. You idiot! You said nothing would happen on this. You know, right? You said everything was going to go fine.
No, but, like, I'm very into scripts. Like, I love reading scripts. And as a writer, you know, when you wrote for Dennis Miller and stuff, and you're on these movies, you said that you look for cameras and the grips and learn that process. Do you ever, like, really examine the writer from the script's point of view?
Oh, sure.
Oh, cool.
That too.
Yeah.
That's another part of it. Yeah, you know, leave room in your life to do lots of these things. You. I mean, the writer isn't always there. You can't always talk with the writer like that. Right. Sometimes that happens more in a series, is that they're going to start developing you a little more. Then they'll talk with you a little bit, you know. And they see what you're sort of bringing to the show, like with, started happening with the CBS short-lived series Chaos. I was one of the agents on that. And then I was on another more recent Showtime series called I'm Dying Up Here. And they started developing.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey produced. And I was playing the booker for The Tonight Show, the comedy booker. And they started developing a little more and more. Just, you know, just, and I didn't know what was going to happen. Just do your thing. Just try to do right by the show and by the character.
Yeah.
You can't always promise yourself anything beyond that. Sometimes you come away, nothing happened. You know, all you know is everyone went, hey, man, you did your part.
Yeah.
It's a gamble. And this time, there was room for you, you know? But you also, you did your job. You showed up.
Yeah. That's all that matters.
You do these things. These should be considered basics.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be considered extraordinary. They should just be, this is what you always do.
Yeah.
Whether you get this or whether you get that or another. Yeah. You always do this.
How has stories changed from, you know, from like the 80s to the 90s to now? Because now it seems like it's more less than is better in a script. But I've read 90s scripts where, like, they literally describe everything.
You mean in expository dialogue?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are other films that had it through narration, like Goodfellas.
Yeah.
He's, you know, Ray's got a lot of, you know, doing the rolling over footage of himself, down with the copters and the coke and all that stuff, and he's describing everything. That's another way to do it.
Yeah.
And sometimes a flashback is the way to do it. It's pretty rough, though, when it's the, sure, you're the most decorated cop on the force with a perfect, pristine record, except that he's a maverick and he never follows the rules and always goes off the book. And the mayor's coming down on me, and when he comes down on me, I come down on you. Make this sound new.
Yeah. Breathe through your nose. So.
Mm.
A couple more questions for you. If you could redo one thing in your career on movies, just the exact same way or different way, which project would you do it?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Tough one.
Yeah, be you. Be you in the scene. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't make room in your head for too much of that. About going back in the woulda, shoulda, coulda, you know, there's too much ahead of you.
Yeah. Let's you could always do
free
it
the RAM space up for what's ahead. That's all. You know, you're younger, you learn, you made a mistake, you grow, you go. Don't freeze yourself in a painting of your own past. You know, don't get stuck to an old image. Improv is yes and forward.
Yes and.
Not yes. I argue with you. You're a cowboy from outer space. Yes, and I'm selling hot dogs.
Yeah. But you want to say, like, no, I'm A, and I'm C. That's like a rule breaker, right?
Well, yeah, that can add up to the wrong stuff in the long run.
Yeah.
There's little places to do it, but I wouldn't live by it in improv. You'll get called for it.
Yeah, you just keep
saying. As a scene stomper, yeah.
Yeah, you just take it.
Yeah.
Take it and then dish it back.
Right, that's just a training for your brain to add to it. It's training.
Who would you say is the best improver you've ever improved with?
Oh, you know, Robin.
Robin
Jonathan Williams. Winters, yeah.
Oh, sure. Jonathan Winters.
And then the guys from Whose Line and the Second City people. I won't name names beyond that because I think there's a cadre of brilliant minds out there that on the right night, it was their night. They were the best in the world on that night.
Yeah.
It's not like an Olympic standard where it's met every time it's in the arena.
Yeah. That's true.
It's circumstance has something to do with it, too. And so it's if you know improv and you recognize all those things, you can see that those standards were met even if the exact set of responses weren't the same.
Yeah. And then my last question is dinner for schmucks. What was that?
We did some improv. You know that thing where I lean over to the vultures eating there and go, are they cute when they're young or are they this horrible the whole time? That was an improv.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it seemed like that entire scene was
lots
improv.
Of improv, and certainly Steve, you know,
yeah.
Does tons and tons of improv.
Yeah,
and so there was enough room for other things. And the fight with, he's got the cane out and he's doing the sword fighting, blind sword fighting. I go, kick him in the business center. I'm just making stuff up as I go. You know, drunk, can't get food through my mustache, and those are all things you just put in with. They'll let you do it or not.
Yeah,
and he lets you do it. It's in.
I thought that that movie had a great message. You know what I mean?
Of inclusion.
Yeah.
And not status-based. Yeah.
Well, I got out of it is you should be nice to people.
Inclusion.
Yeah. Oh, that's what inclusion meant?
Include them.
Oh, yeah.
Just because he's not in your cool, rich club doesn't mean you shouldn't include him.
Yeah.
He means nobody any harm. Invite him in. Yeah. If you should be a little more magnanimous with your luck.
And then last question about your special that's coming out at the end of the month, right?
Or yeah, 22nd.
The 22nd of June.
That's what I was told.
All right. How many? So we were talking earlier how when you filmed your young HBO special, the half hours you did two shows. How many sets on this one did you do? Was it a one take or?
One long take.
Wow.
And cut back a little bit.
Okay. So was that nerve-wracking?
There were starts and stops and technical difficulties, and it was a night of challenges because we just sort of out of the blue just found a place, set it up, brought people in. Every part of it is an improv.
Right. Was that challenging?
Yes, it was all kinds of challenging. Yeah. It was like, you know, juggling many things at once, waiting to see what'll break next.
Yeah. But you're proud of it. Like,
yeah. It came, you know, came out good. So
I'm sure it came out great.
Everyone was a wonderful, you know, you went up to Cozy's. You know what not Cozy's.
Flappers?
Culex. Woodshed. You know Culex up on, it's Laurel Canyon just north of Magnolia?
No.
On the east side. It's a fun little place, and they were looking like they might go down. Looks like they're coming back up again now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, they got the funding to stay. Don't go away. You know, we're losing so many of the places that were great before the pandemic, and this one, the shingle will go out again.
I co-book a comedy club in Huntington Beach, and when this pandemic started, I didn't think we would come back.
Yeah.
You know, our doors are open now, you know what I mean? So
good for you.
Yeah. So I mean,
good.
You know, we did it in a smart way where like like money wise, we don't have a big budget to offer the artists, but we try and take care of them. But the percentage that's ours, we kept in like our account. And I think I truly feel like that is what saved us this whole year.
Well done.
You know what I mean? So
well done.
It's a little Asperger business smart on my end.
Well, you should be very proud of how that came out. Yeah. You handled it very well.
Yeah. So.
Nicely done.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, we're out of time. But I
was enjoying this.
Well, I would love to have you back with my co-host. He's on suspension right now.
What?
Yeah.
What happened?
I have a belief that you shouldn't argue with someone over their political views, especially on air with a guest. And I felt like he was going too far with our last guest. And I was like, you know what? Just take a break. I don't need that energy. You know what I mean? Because it was a bad interview. I like good interviews. You know what I mean?
You do run a good interview.
Oh, thank you.
I had a good time, and we talked about a lot of fun stuff.
It was fun.
And I think we also got some good notes out for young artists, you know, which I really do want to recommend everybody look into doing. Studying improv and then studying cold reading with Brian Reese, which I believe is 323-969-8989, and he's in Hollywood. And
wow, you have his number.
yes, well, he's...
he's the best.
He teaches you the shortcut you need to get that acting scene detail for detail down in no time flat and just make some basic choices. Stick with it.
Have you ever thought about running a teaching improv class yourself?
I was thinking about teaching a class. If there's enough interest out there for maybe online, but...
I would definitely do it.
I would like to see if classes are coming back to be in a live setting and then have a camera set up in the room. And it's just like talking to the person, you know?
Yeah.
Even though it is an on-camera thing, because it'll be on-camera improv. It'll be the kind of improv you're doing for a mockumentary.
Yeah.
And the character choices you make for a mockumentary and how they are different from just doing regular improv.
I think that's awesome. I think classes like that, especially like geniuses, when you learn from them, that's how you can... you know, up in your game, you know, like Norm mentors me at stand up and I feel
you landed a great mentor with Norm, man. Yeah. That's some pay dirt you landed right there.
Yeah,
my friend.
I'm so thankful.
Wow. That's a thing of beauty.
And I feel honestly, I'm only a good stand up because of the schooling, you know what I mean? And and I feel like if I would love to do improv and learn from you.
I will work on that then.
You know what I mean?
You bet.
All right.
It's a deal.
Rick, where can the folks at home follow you and support you?
Twitter, at Rick Overton.
All right.
Marilad. And thanks again. You run a tight ship. It was really fun.
All right. We're going to lock up, and then if I can ask you for one more favor after it's done, if I could get a picture with you. All right. He nodded. Yes. Excellent.
Picture, sure. Sure, a picture. Now, what do you mean by picture?
Just a selfie, so I could tell friends I met you.
Yeah.
All right, guys, subscribe, rate, and review to the show on Apple Podcast, and support us. Follow Rick on Twitter and watch out for his special on June 22nd on Comedy Dynamics. All right, I'm Keith Reza, guys, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Keith.
Of course.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee. Right here on LA Talk Radio.